during the week, if you stand on Potassium Street at a certain point for longer than 30 minutes, you will become ill. Your lips will burn and your eyes will run. All the streets in the industrial estate have these cute names. Boron Street, Cobalt Avenue.
Sodium.
Sodium Street.
Plutonium Street.
So we go over. So definitely have your photograph taken under the Potassium Street sign. It's a must on any ecotourism calendar, especially for the toxic tours. I'm unhappy to report that less than a third of these industries here actually contribute to the national pollutant inventory. The local creek system we're on here is a tributary of a creek called Saltwater Creek. Saltwater Creek flows to the east and then to the south and comes out at the mouths of the Pine River, a place called Hayes Inlet, which is on Moreton Bay. Hayes Inlet is recognised as an internationally important wader bird roosting and feeding site, and it's protected by the Ramsar Agreement, the Canbar, the China-Australia Migratory Bird Agreement, and the Jambar, the Japan-Australia Migratory Bird Agreement. So anything that runs off from here will ultimately go into that internationally protected wetland. So when we eventually see Binary Chemical Site and you realise what's happened there, no one downstream was warned at all. None of the groups who do estuary monitoring or protection were told to stay out of the water. They were told nothing about the impacts that were coming down the creek. But this is one of the reasons this industrial estate should not exist. It's on permeable soils, upstream of internationally significant wader bird habitat, surrounded by endangered regional ecosystems. You think from first basis planning and the fact that it's got residences within 500 metres of schools, that this is not the location for noxious hazardous industries. But in Queensland it is. We have two mayors and one state member who are financially involved in this development. So because it's at the edge of everyone's council where you can forget about it, and it's at the edges of safe seats which aren't going to turn over quickly, you can ignore your constituency, and that's what makes it suitable as a noxious hazardous facility, not because of any of its environmental attributes. To be endangered, you have to have lost 90% of your original extent. Now this track is the fifth or sixth biggest parcel of that particular ecosystem left. And you can see how you want to treat it. Okay, we have noticed dumping of refuse prohibited. You look down the end of the street, what will you see? But there's another sign there that says no entry, and that's to stop people like you and me walking through that bushland. So if we walked across that fence there where the no entry sign is, the police would be here in very short order. But if you want to dump rubbish and you want to hoon around and do burnouts, see all these wonderful burnout marks here? And people also dump sump oil on the road just to make sure you get a good cloud of smoke. And sometimes up to 50 litres or more of sump oil are dumped on the road so people can do burnouts here. The state government response is to put up a sign to say don't dump rubbish, which they don't enforce, or to put up a sign to stop trespassing greenies finding out what's going on, and they do enforce that. So those no entry signs have only come up as a response to the blockade of Steritech and all that sort of stuff. They've decided having us in here and seeing what's in here is too dangerous. Notice the guy in the blue car passed us three times and then the police showed up. The idea is to minimise the amount of workers who are potentially at risk of an accident. So what you want to avoid doing is co-locating a worker intensive industry with a chemical intensive industry. So here we have this facility which is as yet unsigned, but it looks chemical. We have Steritech not far up the road. And then this is going to be furniture makers. So you're going to have a large workforce sitting here. So, classic example of planning. Now, a normal environmental impact statement would pick that up and say, really, guys, isn't there a more appropriate area on the other side of the highway for your manufacturing rather than co-located with these dangerous goods? Steritech, it's a food irradiation facility built amid Mutt's protest several years ago. Stores quite a large amount of radioactive cobalt here. Originally passed as a sterilising agent for medical supplies. Obviously, the owners would like to seek that, to scope that up to foods, herbs, foodstuffs, all that sort of stuff. Necessitates the transport of radioactive cobalt from the Port of Brisbane through the Moreton Bay Marine Park, down through the Great Barrier Reef, to up the highway to delivery here. As far as we know, the spent rods will be stored on site for up to 10 years here, and then the spent rods will be shipped back to Canada, where they came from, to be recharged and reshipped back here. Now, the thing with continuous process, chemical processing, here we have a biodiesel plant. Now, it originally came up as an issue with the refineries in the Port of Brisbane where this cobalt gets shipped by, is that normally plants like this, when they're operational, and this is a very small operation, so it might not be true, takes a significant time to turn it off. Matter of fact, for an oil refinery, it takes several days before you can turn it off. The thing is, if you have an accident, and accidents have happened in these sorts of facilities, and the area, a rod or something, has been breached by a side impact on a vehicle or some other very unlikely but nightmarish scenario, is someone would have to come into that radioactive zone to turn these facilities off, because you can't turn them off at the flick of a switch. You have to run the liquid out of the system, you have to wait for things to cool down or heat up or what have you. For an oil refinery, that can take days. So if there was a major accident involving radioactive cobalt at the Port of Brisbane near the oil refinery, someone would have to sit there, potentially exposed, for 2 or 3 days to be able to turn that facility off. To say the local residents weren't happy with this facility, obviously the fact that we're even walking past triggers a bit of a response. And you've got to ask yourself why this facility is anywhere near housing. But again, you've got some of the natural values across the road here that are all up for industrial estate. Down Potassium Street. Potassium Street isn't fully developed yet, so just imagine what a tour it will be in another 10 years when you've got a nucleus like a food irradiation plant to start with. The sky's the limit in terms of toxic. They're able to deploy 4 extra security guards, a police unit, plus a roving spy, to wonder why people are walking on the footpath. But when it comes to inspecting the safety and operation of these facilities, most of them will never see an environmental inspector. Okay, we're going down the hill towards a chemical company called Binary Chemicals. Also further on down this hill is BCD, where they do destruction of polychlorinated biphenyls, which they ship up by road and by some sort of amazing catalyst process that produces no waste and is perfectly safe. They get rid of it. Who knows how much biphenyls they're storing. BCD was approved by code assessment, as in there was no public notification or appeal that that facility was going to be built, that polychlorinated biphenyls were going to be shipped here and destroyed here. Further on down the road, we'll see where a little creek comes out of the industrial estate. On the left-hand side of the road is a sediment erosion control structure, which until we complained about it in 2002 had never been desilted. When we did complain about it in 2002, they sent a truck out who pumped it out, drove downstream, down the bush track, away from the sediment trap, and dumped it in the creek. So whatever was in there got moved on further down the creek. The whole idea is you're supposed to clean them out every year, and you're supposed to take them away to secure landfill for treatment, what have you, because they're one of your first lines of defence against making sure that really important Ramsar, Cambar and Jambar bird habitat is thoroughly protected. But you won't see that. On the right, you'll start to see what they did to the creek after we had a particularly nasty fire here at a chemical called Binary Chemicals. Binary Chemicals manufactures Roundup, plus also deals with precursors and various concentrations of 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. The factory burnt comprehensively, as in there were canisters shooting into the air. Firefighters got sick, ambulance people got sick. The state government was going around telling people they'd done air quality monitoring and it was perfectly safe, and if they stayed inside, they'd be okay. Now, there is no real-time chemical testing unit that I know of on the planet that will do real-time monitoring for dioxins and furans. Dioxins and furans are a chemical class that are an inevitable byproduct of burning those chemicals I've named previously. This is how those impurities ended up in Agent Orange, is because the production process was too hot and you ended up with significant impurities of dioxin. Dioxin is a chemical with 2 parts per billion will kill a mouse. It is very long lived in the soil, very persistent, and will mostly trap to the sediments. So just by way of a public health notice, you're entering a zone that has been potentially contaminated by dioxin. So if anyone feels uncomfortable, now would be the time not to proceed any further. Otherwise, as we get closer to binary chemicals, the likelihood of concentration of those chemicals will increase. So I'd suggest at the very least, make sure your shoes are thoroughly washed on a grassy surface or something once we've finished. This is part of the endangered ecosystem here. As you can see, it's being well treated again. But you notice now, because we've persisted on walking, there's now a paddy wagon driven past. That's the priorities here in Queensland. Now you can smell some of the smells. That's a manure processing and waste processing facility. This is Custom Chemicals. I really don't know what they do. If they submitted to the National Pollutant Inventory, we'd have a better idea. But from an emergency services perspective, when a firefighter would come up to this area and be confronted by a fire, they'd want the maximum information possible to know what to do with that fire. So they didn't put water on something that was spread by water. They didn't spray something on there that would react inadvertently with that chemical and cause secondary explosions. The only information on the fence is there: flammable gas, flammable liquid, flammable solid, oxidizing agent and corrosive. And I would bet that on any system that the firefighters use, they would not know where in that plant all those chemicals are and what the best emergency response would be. And that's why these facilities, when they're built, have to have proper emergency services planning, so you don't subject your firefighting and emergency personnel to unnecessary risk. One of the problems they had with the binary fire is that the fire safety instructions would have said, for a hydrocarbon based fire, do not use water. The water only spreads the fire. Use firefighting foam. But it was such a confusing situation that rather than using foam, they used water. This had two impacts. The first of which is that it spread the combustible material. The second of which is it generated a lot of water, which was contaminated with a range of hydrocarbon contaminants. So by not having the adequate safety procedures in place, not having any rehearsals, and not having any proper communication because they've shut down the advisory committee, this actually magnified the damage done. Okay, so next to customs, we have this place, which tells us has arsenic and kerosene, toxic gas, oxidizing agent, flammable corrosives. Now, the thing about this sort of planning is, what happens if something by accident goes up in there? How will that react to the place next door? How will arsenic react with the flammable materials next door? The whole idea why we got the Dangerous Goods Management Act in place in Queensland was to look at the cumulative impact of these areas. The Act allowed to take separate businesses like this, which normally have to be considered in isolation, and the Act allowed them to deem this whole facility a major hazardous facility, which will allow them to look at the cumulative impacts of the development. And the government, remember, made the decision with no environmental impacts that this would be noxious hazardous industry. Therefore, that is code accessible. There is no public notification or appeal process generally to these developments. This is the corner of Potassium and Magnesium Street. Binary Chemicals is down Magnesium Street. We won't go there. I mean, you've seen one burnt factory, you've seen them all. But basically, here we are at the intersection. This is where the major impact zone would have been of the fire. As far as we can tell, although it's not reported in the National Pollutant Inventory, when Binary Chemicals burnt down, given what was stored there, it was probably one of the single biggest releases of dioxin in Australia. It's only because of the precursors and stuff that they stored here that was likely. And because the emergency services weren't fully briefed about the proper firefighting instructions, or the secondary chemicals that were likely to be presumed to be made by that fire. And as far as I know, no technical committee has ever met to try and work out what burning those chemicals will make, although you can work it out, is that it led to the disaster being a bit bigger than what it should have been. a fire that should have been policed through proper flammable goods storage practices weren't, compounded by no safety and training procedures with coordinated emergency management, compounded by a lack of information to the actual firefighters and police officers on hand at the day, led to significant numbers of those people being exposed in their workplace to a range of contaminants that you would normally not be allowed to be exposed to at any level. There is no minimum level for dioxin. So we were just lucky that these other plants which store the same sort of material but in 10 times the amount, weren't hit by a flying canister. And that's what happens when you've got drums of chemicals that are combustible and inflammatory. When they go up, they shoot off like skyrockets, and they could land in any of these neighbouring properties. They told the residents that it was safe. They told the residents that they were monitoring air quality was safe, and all they had to do was stay inside. They had staff from Binary Chemical back on the site within days of the fire. They tested the water, but they didn't find much because those sort of chemicals stick to the sediments, but herbicides did go many kilometres downstream. When the EPA put bunds in the creek, but they didn't line them. And so there was still contamination coming out, and they were having to pump the creek backwards because they knew the water was contaminated, and they were taking the water, and we don't know where they were putting it, because under the waste tracking, no record had to be kept of where they took it. What we've had is a large number of people, perhaps many hundreds of people, who aren't involved in this industry as employees, exposed to contaminants. We've had schools and other facilities downstream exposed to contaminants. The local residents are currently working on a class action. In response to this, the state government has done nothing. They've instituted a token cleanup. They're giving the company a leg up to expand its operations. They still haven't addressed the underlying contamination in the creek, and they're talking about expanding the Narangbar industrial estate and blaming the residents for having moved there. Whereas it's the state government and the local authorities who approved those developments, even in the face of advice of organisations like ours that said this is just craziness. Now that we're nice and secure with our police escorts, I'll show you how you protect an endangered regional ecosystem in a creek line leading to a Ramsar protected wetland in the case of an industrial accident. Witness. What you do is you completely trash all the vegetation. You dig up the bed and the banks, and you make bunds that won't actually stop the water flow, and you dam the creek. You then pump it and dispose of the water somewhere, and you walk away and you leave the creek like this. The public will have to pick up the expense of this. This used to be a nice riparian area, somewhat threatened by industrial estates with an open parkland running through. Our first Narangbar walk, we came up through here, and there were a number of large habitat trees. There are no more large habitat trees. The riparian function has been completely destroyed, and in actual fact, all they've done is trap a whole pile of contaminated sediments here. Someone is going to have to get all that sediment, and it's going to have to be treated somewhere and disposed of somewhere. I would suspect what they will do is they'll bring in clay fill and they'll cap it and say capping will remove the problem, ignoring the fact that it's in the water table. To be a creek, you've got to be in the water table, right? So it means the water of the creek extends either side of the banks for considerable areas and underground. So unless they've lined the bottom of that with bentonite, or they've lined these walls here with bentonite, we're getting full exchange of whatever's in that water and sediments going through into groundwater and potentially going downstream. But this was the state government's best response they could do to this particular fire, was you get in and you wreck the creek with a bund that didn't stop it. The herbicides went down and killed broadleaf plants for up to 1.5 to 2 kilometres down this stream. I'll just show you a few more of the industries that make Potassium Street so attractive. Well, Krypton Street is, I believe, BCD, which is the polychlorinated biphenyl disposal facilities down that road. This timber treatment yard here turns pine into copper, chromium and arsenate logs. This is a pesticide herbicide precursor manufacturer to our right, with similar chemicals to what was at Binary Chemicals. We have one, not one, but two copper, chromium and arsenate facilities. It's amazing that to this day, people are still buying CCA treated pine. It's been known for 20 years that the CCA will dissolve out of the pine. but nonetheless they've persisted in putting it in play equipment to this day. In other jurisdictions such as Europe and stuff, they have completely outlawed the use of CCA for any sort of play equipment. Just to add to the inflammable mix, we've got asphalt. Get rid of hydrocarbon waste through some form of incineration or chemical treatment. That's nationwide here. During the week, this is the part where you don't want to stand for more than half an hour. Two tanneries. Now, to our left here, behind that bushland, used to be unlined, open waste disposal ponds for the tannery. And in the past, police, in hot pursuit of speeding motorists, a speeding motorist went into those ponds because there was no fences. Well, isn't that a lovely whiff? The police and emergency services were told not to tell anyone. The driver got out of his car, ran, and was never found. So we don't know what sort of condition he is in, but they were unfenced and unlined. Recently, however, to our great pleasure, they've filled it full of soil, and I believe they'll be capping it, and then someone soon will forget that there was ever a pond there, and they'll put another building on top of it. 5 years we've been trying to convince the Narangba Industrial Estate, the EPA and the state government to put in permanent air quality monitoring stations here. You'd think with just what you've seen here that you'd want to know what the air quality is here, both for occupational health and safety plus the safety of surrounding residents. As far as I know, there are no permanent atmospheric monitoring stations anywhere in the site. You'd think if you're going to approve a site for major noxious, hazardous, offensive industries, you would put in groundwater monitoring, you'd put in air quality monitoring, and you'd put in stream water quality monitoring. None of the above have been done for Narangba. So during the week, it is 10 to 20 times worse. We haven't even shown you the garbage dump and the dump where they dump 15 to 20,000 tons of human sewage sludge every year, which they used to allow run unimpeded into the creek we were just looking at, which Pine Rivers Shire and the Caboolture Shire were ultimately prosecuted for. So that's not, you haven't seen it all. There are industries here we haven't showed you with more impact. So this is what happens when nothing can be prohibited. There is no comprehensive environmental impact assessment. There's no thought given to the cumulative impact assessment. There's no thought to what emergency services staff would have to do when they're confronted an emergency here, and what it led to was one of the biggest dioxin releases in Australia. And still more housing is being approved within 1500 metres of this site. Still more noxious hazardous industries are being moved into this site. There is still no government will and government commitment to constrain this estate, or to put a blanket on the housing, or to pay for the relocation, or to pay for the medical expenses of the surrounding neighbourhood. So you've been to Narangba now. You can say you've been down Potassium Street, and what a scenic street it is. It should be on every ecotourism guide anywhere. Please come and see Potassium Street. Well, thanks for trudging along.